TalkZone.com.
Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, welcome to Wild About Pets, sponsored by Nutrisource, a super premium dog food. This is the place we talk in depth to leading authors and experts about all topics regarding household pets or wild animals. To make your listening experience more enjoyable and meaningful, I have a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we will be talking about on the show today. To see these pictures while you are listening, click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone Wild About Pets homepage. After that, you'll click on today's date and you'll be taken right to the page of photos. Everyone seems to love good animal stories. Whether we hear or read them in the news, see them on television shows, or listen to our friends relate the latest antics of their pets, or even when we tell the stories ourselves. We also love seeing unusual animals in the wild, at zoos, on films. The response by millions of viewers tuning in to the new Discovery Channel series Life, which is all about the different life forms on the planet, is a testament to this. And most of all, we love being with animals. There are 73 million pet dogs in the U.S. and about 90 million cats. Heaven knows how many hamsters there are. I had quite a few myself. So if you are like so many other people, you are captivated, moved, fascinated, sometimes fearful, or even repulsed by some of the animals you may come in contact with. And perhaps like me, you've experienced times when you become very emotional about an animal encounter and don't even know why. Why is it that we are so obsessed with and affected by animals? My guest today will begin to answer that question. She is Barbara King, the author of Being with Animals, Why We Are Obsessed with the Furry, Scaly, Feathered Creatures Who Populate Our World. And best thing yet about today's show, Barbara will tell us some great animal stories. Welcome, Barbara. I am delighted to have you on the show today.
Hi, Susan. I'm so happy to be here.
Barbara J. King is professor of anthropology at the College of William and Mary in Virginia. In addition to her new book, which we'll be talking about today, she is also the author of Evolving God and The Dynamic Dance. Again, I have some photos of the animals and subjects we'll be talking about today. So to see them, either click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone homepage, or the purple button you see if you are already on the episode page for today, April 9th. The phone lines are open today. It is April 9th, and we are streaming live right now. If you'd like to join our conversation and ask Barbara King a question about why we are so connected to animals, just call 888-463-6748, or you can email a question to me at susan@wildaboutpets.net. Both that phone number and the email address are at the top of the page of photos. Again, it's April 9, and the number to call is 888. Go for it. Barbara, you mentioned that this book is about the anthropology of our obsession with animals. And I know you are an anthropologist. Tell us, what does that mean? It's the anthropology of our obsession with animals.
Yes, well, I've done some research and discovered that people all around the world gain emotional and, in some cases, spiritual satisfaction from relating with animals. And that's something I was deeply curious about, you know, living here in the U.S. and being so involved myself with animals. I know so many people feel a sense of deep relating, but I wanted to know, is that just us or is it more universal? And what I found is in that different ways in different places, this pattern plays out differently, but it is something that happens everywhere. It can be a species as different as reindeer in Siberia, you know, not always dogs and cats, but it's there. And the second part of this is I've found that we can trace this emotional relating back into our prehistory, in some cases back to our quite ancient past. So really I'm looking at the breadth today and the instances in the past of both our emotional and spiritual bonds, and that's the anthropology part.
Oh, that's very clear. we have photos that we're going to be going through that will take us a little bit through the past. But before we get that, I want to highlight what you just talked about, saying the emotional connection. And I think we're all familiar with the idea of course we know why we love dogs and cats. Who couldn't be joyful in front of a happy, playful dog? And even the most indifferent men friends I've had started to yield as my cat Willie would rub his face against their beard and they'd start petting them. So that's obvious, but it's some of the other animals that we sometimes react to that, as I mentioned in my introduction, we don't quite even know where it's coming from. And I guess I just want to mention one story about me and an ostrich. And so after the cover of your book on my webpage, photo number two is a picture of an ostrich, so everyone knows what it looks like. And I was traveling once, Barbara, in a car driving through one of those wild animal parks in Florida where, you know, you can see the animals. And so we stopped for a moment and my passenger side window was open. And all of a sudden this ostrich approached the car and it stuck its head right in the window and looked me right in the eye. And it's not that I had any particular affinity or emotional feeling about ostriches, but what happened is I was kind of speechless and my eyes teared up and I had this strong emotional reaction. And Barbara, I don't know why, but it just touched me. And so what I'd of course love to do is, as we hear that you tell some of your favorite stories through your research and your travels, maybe you can also help enlighten us for where some of this is coming from that some of us might not even have the words for.
Yes, I look forward to doing that, and I'm really struck by the fact that you mentioned the gaze that you shared with this ostrich, because I think at a first level, that's a big part of why we feel so touched. You know, I love spending time in national parks, going around the United States with my husband, and I enjoy very much hiking and looking at the mountains and the lakes, but the mountains and the lakes don't gaze back. And when we lock eyes with, whether it be a gorilla, an ostrich, or a cat, we know there's a feeling being there. And it's a very different type of encounter.
You know, Barbara, for a moment we were having a bit of a technical difficulty with you. So I am going to just speak a little bit about one of the pictures we're going to be looking at and making sure people can see photographs while we're correcting that. We are looking at photographs of the animals that we're going to be talking about today as I'm talking to Barbara King and the author of Being with Animals, Why We Are Obsessed with the Furry, Scaly, Feathered Creatures Who Populate Our World. And there's a wonderful event that takes place yearly in New York at the Cathedral of St. John of the Divine, and it's a procession of animals and blessing of animals that we are going to talk about because Barbara was actually at this event. And also I want to call everyone's attention to the fact that on the Inside episode page for today's date, there is a great video that you can see that has a clip about the blessing of the animals. So Barbara, I understand we are back.
I am back.
Wonderful. I was just mentioning that we are going to talk about a wonderful event at New York's Cathedral of St. John of the Divine. And I understand you went to this event.
Yes, two Octobers ago, the first Sunday in October, my family and I attended the Blessing of the Animals. And this is the largest cathedral in North America, I learned, St. John the Divine in Manhattan. And I was very curious because I'd heard about an animal procession and a blessing of the animals to celebrate the St. Francis Feast Day. And it was totally amazing. There were about 1,200 people packing the pews of this cathedral. Many of them had dogs and cats, even rabbits with them. And we were waiting for the doors to open at the front of the church and for the animals to come in. When they did open, the first animal that strode in was a large camel. And behind the camel came a reindeer, a yak, a small ape being carried, many birds, and a tortoise, a lot of other animals. And they made their way to the front of the church, and there they were blessed. The words were very moving. The main clergy was saying, do not have fear. We love you. We protect you, and God will protect you. And the animals were very serene. And when they finished the blessing and turned around to exit out of the church, people spontaneously, you know, we burst into song and we were standing up. It was very emotional and a real celebration of the community of life.
I was struck by seeing some of the clips, the video clips of it. First of all, how peaceful all the animals were. They were not trying to lunge at each other's throats, because besides the procession, all the people that had come into the church, you know, had their dogs and cats,
yes,
and you know, the animals they wanted blessed. And so that was remarkable. And that people of all denominations were there. It's very cute on the video that people, you know, kind of referred to. Well, I'm Jewish, but, you know, I thought, hey,
yeah,
why not bring my animal to be blessed? And so, again, there's a video that you can see on that, but that must have been a wonderful experience.
It was, and I will look at the video. I'm not sure if the video includes the very last person in the procession carrying not an animal, but a wheelbarrow and a large shovel. So, you know, they are animals. And there was, and it was a decorated wheelbarrow. All the animals had garlands around them. The camel had a large garland around its hump. And there's a picture as well on your site of Oscar the tortoise,
yes,
who is on a pillow and is being pulled in a cart. And there were no fights. There were no growling. There was a sense in the air of just, you know, peacefulness. Now, I have to say that after this formal event ended, we all went out into the grounds of the cathedral, and the clergy from the church arrayed themselves around in the yard, and they each began to give personal blessings to people's, you know, own animals, the dogs and cats and the rabbits. And then we had to be careful to keep the dogs apart from each other at that point. But, it, you know, I could see in the eyes of people who would listen as the clergy, you know, put their hand out or near their animal and ask the animal's name and then would say, all right, Jack, we're, you know, we bless you today and we send you forth into the world. And people were just, they were just moved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I liked about it, as you indicated with your comments, was that it was such a community event. You know, nobody was there because they were one denomination or another. The species were all together. People were chatting and happy. I had a great time.
And regardless of anyone's religious or affiliation at all, you relate in the book that there is a long history with animals and humans that have some emotional and religious overtones. And, of course, this is clear with this event in the cathedral in New York. But beyond that, what it signified to me, Barbara, and I'm sure this is why you also basically start your book with it, is what it tells us of our connection of people and what they are willing to do, and obviously how we are thinking of these animals as much more members of our family. There's a wonderful story you relate also talking about a humpback whale that had been trapped. And I love this story, and I also do have one of the photographs of this incident. So tell us what happened and what the humans that were helping try to free this female whale experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a few years ago in the waters off of San Francisco, there was a female humpback whale, obviously a very large mammal, about 50 feet long and 50 tons in weight, who became entangled in crabbing equipment. So there's all of these ropes that are very long, that have weights attached to them every 60 feet that have encompassed her. So she's encircled and she's trapped. And the problem, of course, is that she had to try to keep her blowhole above the waterline, and that was difficult because the weights were pulling her down. So she was struggling, and because she is such a large, you know, animal, people could see this, and they sent out rescuers to see if they could help her. And the rescuers determined that their best hope would be to cut her free, meaning they had to jump into the water with diving equipment and try to literally get her out of this net by using knives. Now, as you can imagine, this was something undertaken at personal risk to the rescuers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is 50 tons we're talking about, and she was also aroused. But
yes,
they did this for about an hour. And they later related how, to their great surprise, this whale remained calm. She stopped thrashing, stilled herself, and they described a strange kind of vibration coming from her body. At the moment that she was able to escape, in other words, the ropes had been cut, the rescuers kind of, you know, stepped back in the water or you know, swam away a little bit. But she didn't immediately bolt for the sea. What she did was she circled the four rescuers in the water and nudged each of them in turn, and then she went away into the open sea. Now, this is very hard to explain this away as some kind of random behavior. I read one scientist who tried to do so and said, well, she's circling because she was still for so long and she just has to get her energy out. But that doesn't do it for me. The fact that this whale went to each rescuer one by one by one by one, they felt they were being thanked. This is written up in various magazine and newspaper interviews. The divers in the water said, I feel that I've been touched by a mammal who is expressing gratitude. And I think that their interpretation has a lot of validity.
And in and of itself, isn't there great value in what the experience of those humans were with this animal, that something had happened out of the ordinary, and probably they will think differently about this life form for the rest of their lives, I would imagine.
I think that's exactly right, Susan. One of the divers actually said that it was, quote, an epic experience, and that he would never, again, be the same as a person. Mm-hmm. So, all right, he's saying he's changed. Now, I think that that would likely spill over. In other words, he's going to look at whales now as sentient, conscious, feeling creatures. But wouldn't it make you really question lots of animals around you? You know, if you have that kind of encounter, this is what happened to me sort of early on in my life when I started working with great apes. I started really seeing that gaze that we lock into with animals when we get the sense that there's somebody there.
Yes.
And then they start acting in these ways that really tap into complex emotion. The thing that's so valuable about that is you begin to realize that you're living in a world, you know, you're surrounded by creatures that have deep emotions.
And what puzzles me a little bit about it, Barbara, even though I have a similar experience that I'm going to relate to you, is why this matters so much. First of all, relate my experience about, you know, gazing into an animal's eyes. I was swimming in the Florida Keys at the Dolphin Research Center, and I had the wonderful opportunity of being able to go into some of the waters with the dolphins. And at the time, this was years ago, I really respect that facility because they're doing education and research, and it's not just, let's say, a tourist attraction. Uh-huh. But anyway, so here I am in the water with, you know, bottlenose dolphins, and one of them came up to me, and of course I've been around dogs and cats and, you know, many other animals, and this dolphin looked at me, and I know you know this experience, Barbara, it was unlike any other experience looking at an animal.
Uh-huh.
It's like when you look at a human being, you know that there's a mind that is right there. I couldn't really explain it, but there was someone, something there unlike what you feel with a dog or cat. And it was stunning.
That's a good word, Susan.
Now, what I wonder, though, is because we have this wonderful ability to relate with people of our own kind, and we get feedback and thanks, you know, from people, and hugs and affection and nudges from humans, I wonder, Barbara, why is it then that it is so remarkable or special, or why does it even move us when it's coming from a non-human?
Well, I have two answers to that, I think. In
the
first place, it's just unexpected to us. You know, we are raised in a human world, and we expect human customs and like begetting like. If we're basically good and kind, you know, we may expect that back. And that is something that's fairly typical in our lives. It's not expected because so much of our society, at least the way that I grew up, was based around an animal-human divide. You know, humans do one thing, animals do another. I don't believe any longer in that divide, but my lack of belief in it comes from those experiences that are so startling. They're so unexpected. They make us sit up and pay attention because I don't think that a lot of us, you know, really would have expected these things to happen. The other answer that I have, though, is, unsurprisingly, an answer from anthropology.
Good.
What I write about in my book is part of the why of why we're so touched,
yes,
is because we really were shaped from thousands and millions of years ago by being with animals. And by this, I mean even something as basic as our visual system, our hearing system, and the way our brains work, they evolved right alongside our own struggle for survival with animals. You know, millions of years ago, before we were hunters, before we were cave painters, we were prey. We evolved in an ecosystem where other animals were carnivores, were designed to eat us. So from a very early time period, we learned to track and observe and pay attention to animals because it mattered to our survival. Now, as our lineage began to develop and our brains expand, we became the hunters, and that equation began to shift a little bit. But over time, we started to think symbolically about animals, you know, paint them, bury them, all of these things that I think in a few minutes I'll be able to describe in more detail.
Yes.
But where I'm going here is the idea that part of the why is simply because we know that we have shared, you know, birth, death, suffering, that there's so much shared and that we affected each other all along. I'm not saying we consciously know this, but I think it's kind of built into us after all of these thousands of years. So we carry this legacy with us. And now here we are, many of us, in a very busy world, urban, suburban, you know, driven by our cell phones and our computers and our tweeting and our Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and being able to lose ourselves in that gaze and in that timelessness of being with an animal, unexpected, long evolved, all this stuff comes together in a moment when we can let our cares fall away and lock eyes and just feel vital and alive, and it's part of us.
Perfectly said. We're going to take a break right now. Please stay tuned.